Welcome to Look Ahead Radio and Viewpoints Around the World. My name is Tom Arms, and in a moment I'll be joined by my old friend Lockwood Phillips. This week we debate the Kim-Trump summit, also the shambles of Brexit, the Turkish elections which are coming up on the 24th of June, and a politically correct James Bond museum in Austria. I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much for listening.
Welcome to Look Ahead Radio with Tom Arms and Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And yes, I'm confident we'll be chatting about the issues in North Korea, or actually Singapore, and North Korea and the U.S. summit. All that and more coming up here in just a few moments with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Just to advise you that this portion of the program has been pre-recorded to accommodate his sleeping schedule. And quite frankly, it's time well spent. I can appreciate this. As it is airing here in the States, it's between the hours of 11 and midnight there, back home in London, where we find Tom Arms. Tom, good evening to you. Before we get into the details of the day and the week, how is it there in London? What's the weather like?
Well, it's a bit chilly, but I should say that May this past month has been the hottest month on record for 100 years.
Okay, is that the hottest May or just the hottest month?
The hottest May, I'm sorry.
Okay.
The hottest May.
Good.
For 100 years.
Well, then you've experienced a 100-year event. That's something to put into your diary.
That and my birthday, yeah.
Oh, and your birthday, yes. And now you're a few days older. By the way, happy birthday to you, belatedly. Let's talk about the activities of the past week. Obviously, I would think that the big issue of the day, and we'll get into a variety of issues that are consuming the news there in the United Kingdom and European community, the topic has to be the recent visit in Singapore by Chairman Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. How has that been received?
Well, first of all, you're wrong. I think the big issue of the week was the G7 summit.
Oh, okay. Well, let's.
But we'll start with Kim and Donald. And basically, most people are underwhelmed.
Really?
The former British ambassador in North Korea went on record to say that Donald has sold the family silver down the river. That it's basically a lot of political show, political theater, that not anything much has been achieved from the American or Western point of view, but a lot has been achieved from the point of view of Kim Jong-un. The press has more or less echoed that. They have given they've ranged from sort of grudging respect for the fact that the meeting took place to criticism that he has given away too much too soon. That you still have a massive human rights problem. There is talk about stopping the war games. There's talk about withdrawing American troops. There's talking about lifting sanctions. And yes, Kim has promised to denuclearize, but they've promised this in 1996 and 2005 as well.
Tom, I'm a little surprised by that reaction in light of the fact that this has been compared in some instances to President Reagan's conversations with Mr. Gorbachev and, of course, Nixon's efforts to open dialogue with China. So you're telling me that there's a diminishment of value to this? I'm really stunned by that.
Yes. Well, as I said, a lot of people here think that Trump has given away too much and Kim Jong-un has gotten an awful lot in return.
But what has he given away other than the fact that they've initiated communications? There's been no actual delivery of anything. And in fact, let me just remind you, we've had major changes in North Korea. Of course, a part of that, I think, is infrastructure, the loss of their major nuclear test facility, which, if quite frankly, collapsed as a result of, I'll use the word, abuse or misuse. The other aspect is the return of several hostages, political prisoners, the promise of additional return of political prisoners to Japan. There's been nothing that's been given to him.
What has been given to him is status. He's been elevated from the status of rogue state to international statesman. So that's number one.
I don't think the President of the United States can make that image change for Kim Jong-un. And as you've just pointed out, many of the rest of the Western world, and I would argue even civilized world, still considers him as a rogue tyrant. So I don't know that there's been...
If you invite him to the White House, you give him credibility.
All right. Continue on. That was number one.
Okay. Next thing is that Trump has said that he would suspend all war games or maneuvers with South Korea. That has opposition from the Pentagon. That's pretty clear. The new ambassador there, Harry Harris, has already said he's opposed to it. That is the ambassador to South Korea. You can't very well have troops, 30,000 troops there, if they don't coordinate their activities with the host country. They quickly become useless. The next thing is he has hinted very strongly that he would want to pull out the American troops of it that are in the Korean Peninsula. If he does that, then he creates a vacuum which can be filled either by China or by the North Koreans or something else. He's basically pulling back. But it's come out over the Korean news agency that Trump has promised to lift sanctions.
These are all promises based on verification of actions on the part of Kim Jong-un.
I think Kim will destroy his nuclear weapons, but he still has the technology. And it encourages people, other rogue states, such as Iran, to develop their nuclear weapons so that they can improve their negotiating position with the United States. Success by North Korea could lead to success by other countries.
I don't see yet. I think it's all so much conversation and talk, which is typical of the initiation of these kind of events. I have to say that, again, the president has done something that many other world leaders have wanted to happen, and that is to have a face-to-face meeting with the leadership of North Korea. It has occurred. There are efforts that show that Chairman Kim Jong-un has made a lot of changes. His ability and willingness to even go to the DMZ to meet with the president of South Korea are indications that there are changes. And as far as giving anything to the North Koreans, other than, as you just pointed out a moment ago, a sense of credibility, nothing physical, nothing significant has transferred or has happened at this point. Even the issue of the training and the exercises with South Korea, it's all conversation. And as the president has advised both Kim Jong-un and his negotiators, that it is all dependent upon seeing concrete action. So it's unfortunate that it's perceived with that perception here in the States. And interestingly enough, other than the initial flush of it, we're moving on. There are other things to accomplish. But this is a major change in the world politique.
I think part of the reason that the Europeans are very skeptical about it, or they refer to this meeting as the Guardian, or was it the Times, referred to as quixotic. The Guardian said there's a bill that has yet to be paid. But I think one of the reasons you might find the attitude of the Europeans towards this is because of the way the G7 summit turned out.
Well, let's go to that in just a moment, right after this break. You're listening, of course, to Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. Joining us from London, Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio, joining us this evening from London, England, where it's going on towards, 11:30 p.m. his time, so this portion of the program has been pre-recorded. Tom, we teased the next segment with your comment a moment ago about the sense of diminishment of value of the recent summit just 2 days ago in Singapore, and you said it's a result of the feeling among the European community, particularly about the events of the G7, which you said was really the top story of our program this afternoon. What's the feeling related to the G7?
I think it was summed up by a headline in Die Welt, the German newspaper, quote, "The end of the West." And that's how a lot of people are calling it here. That, you know, it's either the end or the beginning of the end of the Western alliance. People here in the UK are saying that Trump's next target is going to be the dismantlement of NATO. They're very worried about that.
That is not the feeling here in the U.S. Now, we've not seen anything in the press or any indications from Washington, D.C. of that potential. But what we're hearing from you this evening, Tom, is a story that we are not seeing or feeling here in the U.S. So I think this. Thank you for sharing that with us. Continue on.
Well, I'll just give a few other comments. There's a well-known Times columnist called Alex Massey, who says the U.S. is no longer a country we can trust. The German foreign minister says Europe united is the answer to America first. Guy Verhofstadt, who's the former Belgian prime minister and a big man in the European Parliament, says, tell us what Vladimir has on you. Maybe right. We can help, Donald. You know, the Times front page headline was stabbed in the back.
Well, related to the issue.
And then they referred to him as the toddler in chief.
The question related to what does Vladimir have on you, we will help, I saw was related to a photo of Chancellor Merkel leaning over the table talking to the president. And of course, how did that picture, was that the number one picture used?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it was taken from about four different angles and reproduced in a lot of the newspapers, and different countries produced it different ways to give different perspectives on it. I think the White House issued the photograph, which showed sort of Trump at the back of the photograph, looking up towards people, whereas the Germans showed Angela Merkel leaning over into his face. But it was clear that she was very angry, and Trump wasn't much better. You know, it was a very full and frank exchange, as they say.
Well, of course, I think that's worthwhile. So the G7, many of the other members of the G7, the other G6, for all intents and purposes, are of the opinion that this is a major break in their relationship.
Yes. Yes. That? And by the way, they fully support Justin Trudeau and his chairmanship, every single one of them. The only one which has taken a less combative line was perhaps Theresa May, the British Prime Minister. But I think that's in the context of she's very much hoping for a big trade deal with the U.S. in the post-Brexit period.
We're going to get to Brexit here in a moment. As a matter of fact, we'll segue into that. We've got a lot on our plate this afternoon with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio here on Viewpoints Around the World. Of course, the other proposal that came out of that meeting, and I'm just curious how it's what its potential is, and that is the readmission of Russia to be the G8 again.
That was almost laughed out of court.
Okay.
I mean, you know, just a few months ago, you had a case of the Russians trying to murder people in Britain. You know, they talk in terms of, you know, Ukraine was 4 years ago. That's not that long ago, and it's still going on. The problems with Ukraine are continuing. They haven't disappeared. You've also got the problem that Russia continues to hack into various electronic systems around the world. It's continuing to interfere in elections and things like that. It's continuing to have flyovers over the Scandinavia and Sweden. You know, it's an ongoing problem with Russia. It did not stop and end in 2014. There was one other country which supported Trump's proposal to readmit Russia, and that was Italy. Mm-hmm. Italy wants to lift sanctions against Russia and wants closer relations with them.
Now, keep in mind, Germany is doing a great deal of business with Russia. And because of its energy needs. So
yes. I'm necessity.
It's a necessity. All right. There's still this divide between Russia and the rest of Europe. Final question for you before we move on to the issues of Brexit, because I think it's an important part of this conversation. And that is going forward, what next? What will the G7 do? You've expressed some concerns related to the future of NATO. And other alliances, what do you anticipate?
It's up in the air. It really is up in the air. I have no idea. One thing that was very worrying was the communique, which was not signed. The other six wanted to have in that a commitment to the international law and international rules-based society. And Trump refused to agree to that. And that is, from the G6 point of view, if you like, very, very concerned, very, very upsetting.
And of course, the issue came up related to the environmental, the Paris global climate.
Yeah, well, they sort of avoided that topic with Trump. I mean, you know, the other thing that everyone's noted is that he arrived late and left early.
Right.
You know, I mean, it just wasn't important to him.
Okay, as we wrap it up on this, we go to our next break. The image of the U.S. from the European perspective, what's the fallout, both that of the summit and now, of course, the G7, meeting of the G7?
Bad.
Well, I'm going to ask a question when we come back. Is there a chance that President Trump will be invited to the United Kingdom by the Prime Minister? We'll find out about that in a moment. Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment.
Observations of an Expat by Tom Arms from LookAheadNews.com. What a shambles! Theresa May is clinging on to the north face of the parliamentary Eiger by her fingernails, while Remainers bay for her blood on one slope and Brexiteers on the other. The only thing keeping the British Prime Minister on her increasingly precarious perch are behind doors conflicting promises that must be kept secret, because if they leaked, Mrs. May, the government, the Conservative Party and Brexit negotiations would tumble. The Labour opposition, meanwhile, can't decide whether to oppose or join the government, and is, if anything, more divided than the Conservatives. Anti-European Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn instructed his MPs to abstain in key amendments to the EU withdrawal bill, the essential piece of legislation needed to take Britain out of the EU. In an unprecedented party revolt, 6 members of Corbyn's front bench resigned to vote their conscience, and a total of 90 Labour MPs ignored their leader's instructions. Rebel Hillary Benn said, "There comes a point when we have to stand up and be counted." Then there's the Scottish National Party. Parliament allowed only 15 minutes to debate the government's plans to take control from Brussels of legislation related to Scottish fisheries and environment, instead of devolving them back to the Scottish Parliament. The SNP leader in Westminster, Ian Blackford, was expelled for refusing to sit down and shut up. The other 55 SNP members of Westminster's Parliament walked out with him, and a ton of grist was poured into the Scottish independence mill. Why is there such chaos in the mother of parliaments? Is it because of Mrs. May's paper-thin majority? Is it because of Corbyn's spinelessness on the overarching issue of Brexit? No. It's because the Brexit policy is built on a false premise. It is a sandcastle built in a thunderstorm by political figures wearing nostalgia-tinted spectacles. The British Parliament is the scene of unprecedented chaos because the British government has yet to reach the foothills of Brexit negotiation, and it cannot agree directions. It is divided because the sky is turning black from the wings of chickens coming home to roost after Brexit campaign and post-campaign of misinformation, half-truths and downright lies. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about the border between the two Irelands." Wrong. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about the threat of Scottish independence." Wrong. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about the fate of EU nationals." Wrong. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about political disintegration in Europe." Wrong. Brexiteers promised a great free trade deal with America. Wrong. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about Galileo, Euratom, and a host of other technological, scientific partnerships, jobs, the fruit industry, financial services, or National Health Service job shortages." Wrong. Brexiteers said, "Don't worry about trade with the EU. They need us more than we need them." Wrong. British voters were told every time they voiced concerns about the dangers of leaving the European Union that they were falling victim to Project Fear. Well, now the voters are afraid. Very afraid. Largely lost in the parliamentary mire last week was the testimony of Aaron Banks, banker to UKIP and the Leave campaign. He and his PR sidekick, Andy Wigmore, were giving evidence to the Commons Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee. The committee is investigating claims of Russian interference in the Brexit campaign and allegations of illegal overspending by the Brexiteers. Much of the reporting focus was on Banks's and Wigmore's contempt of the parliamentary hearing. They initially refused to appear before the committee, and then they walked out of the committee hearing because of a luncheon appointment. They dismissed as a witch hunt reports of repeated meetings with Russian diplomats and belittled Cambridge Analytica. But just as telling was the campaign banker's description of their campaign. He said, "We were not above using alternative methods to punch home our message or lead people up the garden path if we had to." Wigmore added, "The piece of advice that we got right from the beginning was remember referendums are not about facts. It's about emotion, and you have got to tap into that emotion. Facts, not emotion, are the foundation stones of good government."
We now return to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints around the world with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. As we are airing this program, he is sound asleep. It's some 5 hours ahead of our airing of the program, so this portion has been pre-recorded. Tom, we were chatting a few moments ago about the reception of President Trump and G7 and how the European community sees this president. Real quick question. Do they see this as an attitude of the entire United States or of just one individual?
No, they see the United States as divided.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about divisions then. Let's talk about the United Kingdom and Brexit. Now, I asked that question a few moments ago. Is there a chance that in spite of the fallout from the departure from the G7 and the diminishment of the value, that's my description, of President Trump's recent summit with Chairman Kim Jong-un of North Korea, the question goes to, will he be received or be invited to the United Kingdom by Prime Minister Theresa May?
He has been invited to come next month. It will not be a state visit.
Okay.
You know, the full panoply of parades and everything else. It will be an official visit, although he will meet the Queen, and the crowds will be kept well away from him.
Let's talk about the environment there in the United Kingdom. I've been reading with a great deal of interest some concerns related to Brexit. As a matter of fact, there was some confusing, and from my perspective, I was confused, actions taking place in Parliament, an arrangement supposedly made between the Remainers and those who wishing to leave the European community or the European Union. What is taking place there right now? There seems to be a lot of conflict.
It is very confusing. It's very confusing for us over here. So I think it's even more confusing for you. First, you have to start with the parliamentary arithmetic. Mrs. May has a very slim majority.
Right.
And in order to stay in power, she has to have the support within her own party of both the Remainers and the Brexiteers. Brexiteers mean the people who want to leave the EU. And so she has to walk a very, very tightrope, because on either side of his tightrope are the Remainers baying for her blood or the Brexiteers baying for her blood. Mm. Now, and she goes back and forth. What happened was that what's called the EU Withdrawal Bill, which is the technical legislation which allows the British to withdraw from the EU, the legislation that's required, was amended, came back with about 15 amendments to the House of Commons. And one of them was, and this was the big one, was an amendment which said, if they don't reach a deal, or if it's a deal which they don't really like, Parliament has the right to decide what sort of deal should be in its place. Okay, now this really does not fit with past precedent. It's always been left to the government to negotiate, the executive, if you like, to negotiate treaties, because it's very difficult for 600 people in Parliament, and then you add 800 members of the House of Lords, to agree on anything in negotiations. So it was very important that Mrs. May have that amendment thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
However, a lot of people were interpreting this as, if they don't like the deal, we could get a second referendum.
And what are the chances of that?
Well, it's up in the air still.
Wow.
Because what happened was a lot of rebels were saying, we want the second referendum. And it was really close. In fact, the arithmetic was going against the government.
So there's a possibility.
So right in the middle of the debate, Mrs. May went out of the chamber while the debate was still going on and made a promise to the Remainers that they would have a significant say in what the final deal was if no deal was reached by December. Now, the Remainers think, well, that's great, because the likelihood of getting a deal by December is not very high. We might just get our second referendum. And so they walked out thinking they'd won. But she then turned around and had a meeting with the Brexiteers and said, I really haven't given anything away. It really doesn't mean that much. So both sides think they've won, and she's still walking the tightrope.
And we're going to move on to a few other items that are pretty important here. What does this mean for Theresa May's political future?
It means that she's still walking that tightrope.
Okay.
She's holding things together, literally hanging on by her fingernails.
Wow. All right.
And she's just barely holding things together. And she's proving herself to be a very astute political operator, but she could very easily fall at any time.
All right. Let's talk about another challenge there. And I want to move on to a few other items. We got to get to the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and Turkish elections, too. But you have an issue related to Brexit associated with the Russians.
Yeah. This is a man called Aaron Banks.
Mm-hmm.
And his PR sidekick, Andy Wigmore. What happened is there's a committee which is investigating Russian financing or Russian links over the Brexit campaign in much the same way that they are in the U.S. investigating the possible collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron Banks has met with the Russian diplomats, in particular the Russian ambassador. Now, his big mistake was he said, I had one meeting with the Russian ambassador, and that was it. One boozy lunch, as he described it. Well, it turns out he didn't. He had lots of meetings with the Russian ambassador. And one meeting was just before he went off to the States with his good friend Nigel Farage to help campaign for Donald Trump. And there were suggestions that he was helping the Russians to establish links with the Trump campaign.
All right, now I want to move on. And of course, that is an interesting topic. My quick question for you is, what impact does this have on Brexit? Could it, in fact, because there's been some concern about the election, could it, in fact, nullify the election for the exit that was passed?
No, I don't think. I don't think they could nullify the election. But what it would do would be to strengthen the possibility of having a second referendum.
All right. And then finally, the issue of Russia and elections in general. And it's been noted here as well that there's some concerns about current elections. Is Britain doing much? Is the Great Britain doing much and other countries there in the European community to strengthen their, I don't know how they're going to do it, but some of their communication systems to avoid this, public relations effort on the part of the Russian government?
Yes, yes, they're doing quite a bit. The head of GCHQ and the head of MI5 have both gone on the record to say that they're spending a lot of money on doing just that.
All right. I want to move on to another.
GCHQ is the equivalent of the National Security Agency in the U.S.
All right. I want to move on to another election, the Turkish election. We've only got about 5 minutes to go here. This is an important story because I was thinking that President Erdogan was going to be a slam dunk reelected president, but doesn't look like
especially as he has control of the media now.
Right.
Latest polls from Bloomberg show he has just over 50% of the support. Now, there are six candidates altogether, but it's the elections are spread over two different polling dates. So there's a first round election and a second round.
Mm-hmm.
So if he doesn't win an outright majority in the first round, which is what he was initially predicted to do, then he might well be out of office.
Well, how would that...
And all of the other candidates want to throw out the presidential powers, which he managed to get put in place, and go back to the parliamentary system and a more secular state.
That is a surprise. And I might add, and just share with us the little background on this. The Turks who are living in, for example, Great Britain, the expats, they are all able to vote. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
How about that? What if in fact he loses the election, is there a feeling that he would go quietly into the into the distance?
I don't think there's been much speculation on that at the moment. I have no idea. I don't think he'd have much choice.
Well, all right. Let's.
But you know, he may not.
All right.
He may not. He may stage a coup.
That's what I'm wondering. Talking about Syria, we're seeing very little about Turkey. We are seeing very little about Syria here in the States. Is there much happening in the Middle East at this point?
There's a fair amount happening. There's still fighting going on. It's not as much as it was. There are increased number of Syrian refugees. They're actually coming out in greater numbers, basically because the services are not being restored in the areas that were bombed. So
right.
Places like Aleppo, it's taking a long time for life to return. And so people have to survive, and they're crossing the border into countries like Turkey and Jordan and Lebanon to do just that. Segueing into another item, the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which includes Russia, which, of course, as you know, is heavily involved in Syria. They have, as part of their communique, said that the fighting should come to an end in Syria and it should be resolved peacefully now.
Nothing much. The fighting continues. And I mean,
continues. It's not as bad as it was.
All right.
But it certainly continues. And it's not so much the fighting. It's that they're unable to rebuild the country.
Right. All right. Tom, we're going to take a quick break on that. And thank you for bringing that to the table as well. Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com. Look Ahead Radio here with us this afternoon. Stay tuned for more. We have several items we want to chat about briefly. The World Cup and I'm looking at this, a Bond PC Bond. Oh, pardon me. Is it Bond Museum? What type of PC Bond? Is that correct?
James Bond.
Oh, James Bond. Okay. A James Bond Museum.
But politically correct.
Oh, politically correct Bond Museum in Austria. Stay with us here on Viewpoints Around the World.
Look Ahead Radio will return in just a moment. Welcome back to Look Ahead Radio. Here is Lockwood Phillips.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio. And Tom, a politically correct Bond Museum in Austria, of all places. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. But before we do that, let's talk about the World Cup. I understand the announcement came, and you may or may not be aware of this.
I've heard it.
It's going to be, now they're saying in America, but really it's North America, because it'll include Canada, the U.S., and Mexico, as I understand it. How important is this?
Well, it's the World Cup is massive. You know, I mean, for the rest of the world, everyone else plays soccer.
right, exactly. Yeah.
The height of soccer is international events.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at the club level that counts. It's international. And every 4 years, it's the World Cup. And people come from all around the world to go to the World Cup. Now, I wanted to put this in here particularly because of football hooliganism.
Right.
And they're really worried about hooliganism in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians have a terrible reputation. The state has almost been encouraging football hooligans. Politicians have hired football hooligans as bodyguards.
Wow.
That is known and convicted hooligans. And at the moment, because so much depends on the image that they project during the World Cup, the Russian state, the Russian government is trying to crack down on these hooligans, but they may have created a monster that they can't control. And so there's really big concern that you're going to have a lot of violence on the streets of Russia, in particular between the traditional English drunken louts, and they are drunken louts, and the well-trained Russian hooligans who actually have training camps.
Oh my goodness.
And they're given metal bars and wear gum shields and knuckle dusters and are trained in attack formations on the streets of Russia.
Wow. This is going to be a bad PR issue for Russia then. And Vladimir,
it could be.
And Vladimir,
they're going to try and control it, but I don't know if they can.
And of course, we now have the announcement that the U.S. and Canada and Mexico will be the site of the World Games in 2026, I think it is. It's quite a while away. All right, let's move on to other items. Let's wrap it up this afternoon with you. Always interested in this conclusion for the program of Viewpoints Around the World. We have a Bond museum in Austria, of all places.
Yeah, it's on the side of a mountain. You have to reach it by cable car. They have one in London as well.
Okay.
They already have one in London. But the difference between the one in London and the one in Austria is that it's going to be politically correct, the new one in Austria. So, for instance, they will not be publicizing or showing any scenes from Goldfinger when Sean Connery forces himself on Pussy Galore or slaps her on the bottom, or when he tells his fisherman friend Quarrel, "Go fetch my shoes," he says to the black Jamaican. All that is deemed to be politically incorrect and will be expunged from the museum.
My land. Oh, all right. James Bond still has that kind of mystique in Europe.
Oh, absolutely. He's loved here. Yeah, I mean, and the Bond franchise will go on and on and on.
Do many people know who is the author of the Bond series? Do they know Ian Fleming's name? I mean,
Ian Fleming. And by the way, do you know about my connection with Ian Fleming?
Oh, tell us very quickly.
I used to be the diplomatic correspondent of a chain of newspapers called Thompson. And the person who held that job before me was Ian Fleming.
Okay, well, when do you begin your book writing?
I'm working on it now. I have a few books, but not spy novels.
Oh, all right. Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com, Look Ahead Radio. We know him now while he's still among the plebiscite out there, eventually to become the next, possibly, Ian Fleming. Well, we would all hope. All right, Tom, very best to you. Thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Lockwood.
Viewpoints Around the World with Tom Arms of LookAheadNews.com and Look Ahead Radio.
Look Ahead Radio is a production of The Talk Station.